You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, welcome to HR Bandit, the show where we talk about the latest from the world of work. This is your host, Ankita, and I'm so glad to have you tuning in today. If this is your first time, a huge welcome. If this is you returning, you know you're one of my favorite folks. And you've probably noticed we haven't been around as much as we would have liked to. Now, this isn't because I've been slacking. It's because I've been noodling away on what season two should look like. This is episode 25. We've been around for 2.5 years, and it's time to switch things around. Now, you'll still have me, and we will still be talking about the top three things that have been happening in the last 30 days. But instead of a guest every single episode, I will be joined by one of my favorite HR peers ever. And she is taking on the role of co-host. Now, every single month, the two of us will jump on a call, on a recording to discuss what's new, our views, and our big takeaways from the three topics. We will still have guests, but they'll most likely be around once a quarter. We'll call them in for something that we'll call our big dives, that are topics that need more time and a little more of an expert opinion. However, we'll learn more about what the future looks like. This is episode 25, and it's still going to be a classic. So without further ado, we're going to first introduce you to our new co-host and then the top three topics of the day. So let me introduce you to Apoorva Singh, a voice that you will get a little more familiar with over the next 12 months. Now, Apoorva is a senior HR business partner and talent management lead with Amazon based in the Bay Area, US. She supports and manages the talent function for global teams within the devices business, and she carries an extensive work experience of having worked with organizations like the Aditya Birla Group, which is a giant Indian conglomerate. She's also worked with an Indian startup and now Amazon. Apoorva is passionate about HR technology and also a strong proponent of mental health at the workplace. From what I know of her, she's also very passionate about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and is a mentor to several budding HR professionals. Apoorva, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, and even better now that I'm sitting next to you, well, virtually next to you as your podcast co-host. Listeners, let me tell you that throughout the time Ankita and I were colleagues, I really admired her ability to come up with innovative ideas. So I'm super pumped to join Ankita in this journey. Ankita, I have followed how you launched and kept the HR Bandit podcast alive by churning out interesting topics and speakers, and I can't wait to be a part of it. It really is my privilege to be here as a co-host next to you.
Okay, I'm very flattered, but Bandits, flattery is not what got Apoorva here. She is genuinely one of the most passionate HR people I know. But like, please don't stop with the flattery. Keep it coming. It makes me feel good. This could be our mutual admiration club. But Apoorva, because you're taking on the mantle as a co-host, do you want to kick us in with, tell us what are our top three topics for the day?
Absolutely. So first up, we have the Infosys co-founder, N.R. Narayan Murthy's comment on workers working 70-hour work weeks, which ended up being one of the most controversial sentences from the last 30 days. What exactly did Murthy say, and did everyone take it out of context? For our second topic, we'll have the Nobel Prize of Economics, which made us sit up and take notice. Earlier in October, Harvard economic historian Claudia Golden won the 2023 Nobel Economics Prize for her work on the gender pay gap. Will this accelerate the closing of the gap? Well, only time will tell. And for our last and final topic of the day, Ankita, are you feeling gloomy?
Well, I'm not. I hope my voice doesn't sound any bit gloomy. I'm dialing in from the not-so-sunny Seattle. It's 7 a.m. in the morning. I'm having to pull together every ounce of energy for this, but I am not sure I subscribe to the great gloom. Now, this is, of course, Bamboo HR came up with a finding that says we are more gloomier now than ever. We've had so many greats, But is it time for the Great Gloom? I'm not sure. But before we roll into what promises to be our best mix yet, Apoorva, I start thinking about the end of the year long before the year ends. So it's still on top of mind. We talk about goals. What is one goal you want to hit before the year ends?
So I'm one of those people like who go overboard when they take goals at the beginning of the year, only to forget all about them. And if I have to revisit my list of goals, believe it or not, but one of my goals this year was to have launched a podcast with a dear friend back in India. And while I haven't technically been able to do that, like I think co-hosting HR Bandits comes really close. So thank you.
Well, unexpected turns. It's almost, well, you now co-own the podcast. So it's, you almost launched it. You followed us since launch. I've heard a lot of feedback for you from you that we've also incorporated over the years. But with, I want to, like, I'm very much like you. I also made, 24 goals. I will tell you which one I want to achieve by the end of the year, but I'm going to switch things up and say it at the end of the podcast. So, Bandits, if you want to know what is my goal and whether I will achieve it and how Apoorva and I keep us accountable, well, she's achieved her goal, so she's, like, ahead of me. Stay tuned till the end. With that, I'm going to jump into our first topic of the day. The 70R week. Now, my social media has gone crazy with debates over a comment made by Narayan Murthy, the founder of Infosys. Now, the 77-year-old entrepreneur, during a podcast called The Record by 314 Capital, said, India's work productivity is one of the lowest in the world. Unless we improve our work productivity, unless we reduce corruption in the government at some level, because we've been reading, I don't know the truth of it, unless we reduce the delays in our bureaucracy in taking this decision, we will not be able to compete with those countries that have made tremendous progress. So therefore, my request is that the youngsters in our country must say, this is my country, I'd like to work 70 hours a week. Now, that's what he said. To put in context, the podcast is around 52 minutes long. The comment around work and productivity lasts no more than 2-3 minutes. And going by the debate it has sparked, I don't know how many of these debaters have sat and heard the entire episode. And I think there are two parts to this entire commentary that has ensued post Narayan Murthy's comment. And the first one I'm going to talk about, and then Apoorva, I'm going to come to you for your take on the subject, is just there is something to be said about taking sentences out of context, right? Like, so this sentence was taken out of context. Everyone has an opinion of it, but I don't know whether they've actually heard the context of the whole discussion and the episode. And Bandits, per usual, all links are in the show notes. I highly recommend that you listen to the entire episode, form an opinion that's well-informed, and then come and join the debate, because it's definitely a debate worth joining and continuing. But because the debate over the 70-hour work week and Murthy's request that corporate leaders urge the youngsters to clock in longer and more productive hours is very much alive, Apoorva, what's your take on the topic?
Well, I've read, like you, like I have read so many takes on this topic in the last few weeks, including like some even really hilarious ones. Of course, we're not going into those today. I just find it strange to be debating on this when we've also been talking about the 4-day work week a lot lately. However, if I have to talk about my personal opinion, So I recently read Deep Work by Cal Newport, and I liked it so much, by the way. I'm now rereading it. Cal Newport says in that book that 4 to 5 hours is the human limit of intense focused work in a day. 4 to 5 hours. While not all work requires deep focus, but even if you throw in like 4 to 6 additional hours of shallow work, which is work like checking your Slack, answering emails, hopping onto meetings, it still doesn't take it to 14 hours a day. We are living in a time where we are faced with so many distractions. If you look at the youngsters, there's things like Instagram, TikTok, internal organizations' communication mechanisms like Slack, and to name a few. I think we need a movement to reclaim the attention of youngsters and to make those 7 to 8 hours that they work in a day as productive as possible, rather than telling them, hey, you know, work more, how much, so work for 14 hours so that you're probably productive for 7 to 8 hours. I would rather reclaim people's attention spans and spend efforts there.
Yeah, and I think you bring a very pertinent point about attention spans, and that's a total, like, if we dive into that, it's going to take us an entire episode in itself. And that is pertinent, right? Like so when I was listening to the episode, Murthy's frustration lies with the fact that he's read or learned somewhere that India's productivity is the lowest. And he has given multiple probable solutions, right? Like he's said, at the end of the day, we need to be more productive. It could be by reducing bureaucracy, tackling corruption. And he knows that youngsters can probably do only so much in that space. So he's basically like, and they should say, I want to work 70 hours a week. And I think my issue is less with the 70-hour work week thing than with the fact that he has asked corporate leaders to encourage that thing, right? Because in many of these debates, I've heard some people jump in and say, no, if you were to add all of what we could call work and not just our day jobs, right? So if I was to, for example, personally, if I was to put together my day job plus the 2 podcasts plus writing plus all my household chores and everything else, I am doing 70-hour work week, right? Like in that case, and it's what, divided over 7 days versus 5, 10 hours a day, mix of day job, off day job, personal work, which I could have otherwise outsourced, it may add up to 70. But the corporate world is definitely not getting 70 hours out of me. So that's, I think we can debate that a little bit, but I'm going to share a little bit about how many hours of work, when we naturally think of our day jobs, people around the world are clocking in. And the fact that when I was sharing this with my colleagues yesterday, they were like, well, they were joking about the fact that we don't believe Indians are the least productive. So they were questioning that data. And then one of my friends made a comment saying, you know what, if Indians started working 70-hour work weeks, it'll probably be less than what they're working now. So I don't know the stats on that. We could do whatever we want, but here's the number of hours that people clock in at a day job. So the United States works roughly 36.4 hours weekly. South Korea does 37.9. China, which we thought would be higher, does 46.1. Russia does 37.8. Interestingly, the United Arab Emirates has the longest work week, which by clocking 52.6 hours, Gambia clocks in 50.8 hours, and Bhutan is 50.7 hours. So, like, if we were to do 70, we'd burn out, and other ailments aside, it will definitely, in Narayan's point of view, maybe make us the most productive and put us right ahead of all countries. But it's like, is the cost worth the benefit? What do you think, Apoorva?
I think I go back to my original thought, right? I think as a country, we should strive to be more productive. However, like, to your question, at what cost? What we need is to make our youngsters feel more passionate about their work, but also about the way they lead their lives. I would rather want our corporate leaders to focus on giving our youngsters a great experience at work that helps them be productive and that gives them the passion that then adds to their productivity, something that we will talk about in a later segment coming to great gloom. But I worry that if the narrative gets shifted to productivity being only measured in the working hours, it's not going to serve the purpose. Like if a corporate is working for 14 hours, but if 4 or 5 of those hours are spent in doing non-productive work, I think that's the that's a big challenge for the CEO to solve for.
Yeah, and it is kind of regressive, right? Like, everyone in the world is talking about fewer work hours, but more effective, productive work hours. And then we have a leader who we admire and respect because all of what he's done go in the complete opposite direction. So I think it is interesting.
And I also think it's very individualistic, right? If I'm an entrepreneur, maybe I want to give those many hours to my work. But if I'm just like a regular employee with someone who has a side hustle, someone who wants to do a lot of other things with their lives, does it really make sense for me? So I think that's another angle to it, which we're missing.
Oh, absolutely. And to your most passionate thing about inclusion, if I have caregiving responsibilities or any other, there's no way on earth I can do. Like, I'd be kicked out of the corporation if I was expected to do that. But with that, Apoorva, will you take us into a second topic?
Happy to.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
So this was a topic that I had hoped would kindle a lot of debate and discussions, but surprisingly, it really did not. Well, I'm talking about the research done by Claudia Golden that won her the Nobel Prize in Economics this year, which gave a lot of insights explaining women's historical contemporary roles in the labor market. The complete document shared by the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences with illustrations to better understand the research is available in show notes. In her research, Golden traces back over two centuries and finds that there's no consistent link between women's participation in the labor market and economic growth. I'm just taking a pause and repeating it. She finds there's no consistent link between women's participation in the labor market and economic growth. Her correction of data reveals that, surprise, surprise, women were more involved in the workforce before the Industrial Revolution. It finds, like, I found it interesting that a major reason for this was because prior to Industrial Revolution, women contributed to work like farming or cottage industries, which they could do from home while taking care of their caregiving responsibilities. With the Industrial Revolution, there was a demand for people to step out of their homes to work, and that's what led to a drop in female workforce participation. What else about the research caught your attention, Ankita?
Apoorva, you've definitely done a lot more deep dive into her research than I have. So I'm going to take some of the cliff notes that you sent across to me earlier. And I found that really fascinating because, the report is a really intensive one, obviously, because it led her to winning. And it paints a very good picture about the start of the gender pay gap, because like you said, it wasn't always around, and why it persists. And like, I think the why it persists question is something we try and deal with every single day. So she finds that during the Industrial Revolution and the rise of administrative roles until the 1930s, the gender earning gap saw significant reduction. And then from the 1930s to 1980s, despite there being economic growth, increased education amongst women, the earning gap remained pretty stagnant. And this is because pay discrimination, that is the difference that can't be explained by observed differences like productivity, education, and age that affected women, increased significantly with the growth of service sector. And I think the service sector itself is really interesting in general about how compensation works there. But prior to the service sector, women worked in sectors where wages were rewarded on a piecemeal basis. So if you worked for an hour, you'd get paid X. Now, when it shifted to a fixed monthly wage, what naturally happened is those who had long uninterrupted careers or, I don't know, could be viewed favorably because they worked longer hours, tying into our previous discussion, really disadvantaged people who, I want to expand it to caregiving responsibilities and a whole bunch of communities, but women in particular, because that's what emerged in this study.
Yeah, and here's the real kicker, which Golden calls the parenthood effect. Golden and her co-authors demonstrated that while the initial earning differences between men and women are small, soon as the first child arrives, the gap widens significantly. The nature of our contemporary work, if you look at just the jobs that we all do, like it demands constant availability. And it put women at it does put women at a disadvantage, especially when it comes to caregiving responsibilities. Like in my view, for a real change, we need a larger social and legislative changes to be brought. I remember this recent Instagram post by a famous financial planner where he shares that he showed like the yearly cost of childcare and house help in the US to support working parents comes to an X amount, which means if one of the spouses is earning less than X, it makes better financial sense for them to quit their job and take care of their child and home, which just constantly feeds into the problem that we are seeing. So if we really need to solve for the gender pay gap, I think we need beyond just organizations to participate and bring about a change. We need strong legislature, we need strong policy making to provide better financial and structural support to working parents for an equitable future.
Yeah, and I know gender pay gap report has become a huge thing with some legislatures mandating it. But over time, there are so many things that we're discovering. And I can speak to Europe and Ireland in particular, where we've seen a pension earning gap, right? Like this post-retirement support difference for men and women, because men have a longer continuous career, they have predictable pension contributions, they have like a bigger bucket at the time of retirement, whereas women, because they've not been privileged enough to have like a regular pension contribution with gaps coming in, their end of retirement bucket is much smaller. So it has an impact in so many different ways that we're still like wrapping our heads around. So I'm really, really hopeful that even if it hasn't made it into mainstream discussion as much as we'd hoped, it does get into at least discussion while making policies, to your point. I know you're really passionate about this topic, Apurva. Is there something more you want to add? Or do you want to talk about us being really gloomy?
Well, I know you have a very different take on the point regarding the great gloom. So let's just jump right into it.
Okay. Well, I said I'm not gloomy, right? However, when my sentiment comes to my work, it might be slightly different. I have a whole bunch of energy because I'm meeting a lot of my HR team members here. But this is something that caught both Apurva and my eye. It was really fascinating to me when you were talking about what are the three things that really caught our attention this month. The great gloom came, like both of us noticed this set of research. And then when I looked into it, it really set me off. Now, if you've been around listening to this podcast or reading my blog for a while, you probably know that whenever there's a discussion saying organizations are responsible for employee happiness, it really sets me off. A, I don't think organizations are responsible for keeping employees happy. That is not the job of an organization, because two folks can have the exactly same experience. One could and have two completely different emotions related to it. So it's not happiness. I went into the research by Bamboo HR to try and find out. So they call it the Employee Happiness Index, right? So they've been measuring this from 2020 to 2023. They have reported that the employee happiness has been going down steadily, with a notable 11% drop in overall satisfaction scores. A rate that is supposedly 15 times faster than the previous 2 years combined in the last 11, 12 months. Now, the question they have actually asked employees is your Net Promoter Score question. So it's a question that says, would you recommend this organization to others and why, right? And they have said that NPS score is equal to employee happiness. And they're marketing it as the Employee Happiness Index. They're asking companies to subscribe to it. And then, of course, because we've said employees are extremely unhappy, thus we are in the great gloom, which is complete, a complete mislabel of what's going on. Now, of course, it's caught attention and we can give them credit for actually talking about why employees might be disillusioned with their organizations. But if I had a choice, this episode is the last time I ever want to hear about this research and the great gloom. Apurva, what's your take on this?
Well, I won't say I completely disagree with what you said, but I don't completely agree either. I am a huge proponent of holding organizations responsible for the experience that they provide to their employees. So if there are studies showing that employee sentiment is on a decline, I think they should be doing something about it. However, if I also go back, I also wonder, hey, which was the last report which actually said that employee happiness is growing? I don't remember any. But keeping that aside, a takeaway for me from this, not just this report, but general discussions around employee sentiment has been that we need to, organizations need to adopt an approach that's a little different from how they have solved for employee-related challenges in the past. Take RTO, for example, return to office. And I know, Ankita, you're giving me the eyes on this topic, so we're not debating RTO at all. However, just taking that as an example, there was a recent LinkedIn survey which showed a clear difference in how, in preference of working from home among Gen Z, millennials, and Gen X. However, organizations have given a blanket policy that applies to everyone in the company. I think what's required is a more nuanced approach when it comes to rolling out policies or practices in organizations, rather than a very homogeneous approach which bucketizes everyone in the same group. How many times have we seen an employee survey being analyzed, we picking up what's the most common element out of that survey and then solving for it? I think we need to do differently. We need to identify employee segments from who are responding to these surveys and then find what works best for those segments and solve for them individually. It's much easier said than done. I recognize that, but I think that's where we need a real change.
No, absolutely. There is no topic I agree more with having segregated data, right? I think the biggest gap in surveys right now, and you of course brought out generational segregation data. I was thinking of a gender. You can clearly tell, right? Well, my thing is, if you want to be inclusive, we don't have gender segregated data. We don't have racial segregated data. Of course, in some countries, you can't do it. But unless you have, as long as you have non-segregated data, every action you take from the survey will always be well suited only for the typical employee, which is usually, if you're a global organization, the white male. If you're an India-based organization, a male, or like other things, right? So if you were to have a truly inclusive set of policies, if you were to really shift the needle on, say, employee happiness, you would need segregated data to actually have actions that impact across the board, because it's also likely that because your policies are well suited for the majority, the needle may not shift as much, even if you take policies built for them, because they're already the people who are skewing your scores up. That's my opinion. And like I really hope to see more segregated, segmented data in the future. And to your point, Apurva, that you started with, employees do own employee experience. Right? It is a concerning sign when the net promoter score is dropping. But when you mislabel it, I think the actions that may come as an outcome might be very different from the ones that, like, I could make an employee happy momentarily before they answer the survey by announcing that I'm going to start giving out free food every day, right? They might just say, oh, now I'll recommend everyone comes in, or even better, parcel food to their home. So I think there are a whole bunch of things we need to think about. I hope no one really takes up Bamboo HR on their offer to sell the employee happiness score index or pressurizes them to relabel it as a NPS score indicator that it actually is. But I'm going to get us closer to the end of the three topics. Apoorva, do you have a take on this, or what was your favorite? What's the one of the three that you think we should definitely continue talking about?
I would, again, it's a topic close to my heart, so I would probably pick the gender pay gap for us to deep dive on in the future. Like I said, it wasn't as discussed as I would have hoped in the mainstream, so would definitely like to see more on that.
I agree. Like, I think the three topics that took a maximum airwave, at least from our point of view, was the 70-hour work week. We don't think that's a possibility for corporate leaders to drive down. And if they do, they're making a big mistake. The Economics Nobel Prize, which we 100% should continue the conversation on. And the great gloom, which I hope is not a term we hear again. But Apoorva, here's what we should do. Because you and I are going to come back every single month starting this. Every time there's a new great, you and I need to take a shot of the alcohol of our choice. I know there's no video attached to this podcast, but I'm going to record it on our phone and I'm going to post it on our social media handles. And hopefully 2024 will not have many more greats. I'm kind of tired of it. But before I let you go, Apoorva, I know I haven't prepped you with this question, but is there a term from 2023 that you absolutely do not want to hear in 2024? I just gave you mine.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me that you absolutely want to hear, and I would have said AGI, Artificial General Intelligence. Do not want to hear.
Psst, return to office.
I think it's going to be returned to office for sure. I think we need to put it behind us.
I love how I can nudge you and you won't agree. But great minds think alike. That's it. Okay, bandits, I'm going to get us out of here. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. I'm going to leave you with the one goal that I hope to achieve before the year ends, and that is me running for more than 2 kilometers at a stretch. I hope that on 31st December, I can do 10 kilometers. It is a big, big, big ask. But we will let you know in our December episode how much closer I am to the goal. And then Apoorva is going to tell us one other goal on her list and how much progress she's made against that. With that, Ankita, yeah, go on.
And Ankita, I'm going to drink to that if you're going to do that 10K on 31st December. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of alcohol on the show over the next 12 months. So prepare yourself for it. But with that, on behalf of NHRDN, Apoorva, and I, we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.